Welcome to Becoming is Messy, where we dive deep into the journey of survival, transformation, and everything in between. I'm your host, Megan Dawson, here to share the honest, unfiltered stories behind my own process of becoming. Life isn't a pretty and perfect straight line, and neither is becoming the person we're meant to be. Here, we embrace the ups, the downs, and all the beautiful, chaotic, messy moments that shape who we are. Whether you're in the thick of change or reflecting on past transformations, this space is for real conversations about what it means to grow, stumble, and rise again. So get comfy, settle in, and let's get messy. Hey friends, welcome back to Becoming is Messy. Before we dive in to today's episode, I want to share a gentle disclaimer. This conversation includes discussion of childhood sexual abuse and trauma. I know how difficult and triggering this topic can be, so please take care of yourself as you listen. If at any point you need to pause, step away, or come back later, please honor that. This space is meant to shed light on the realities of trauma, but also on the resilience, healing, and hope that can follow. If you are a survivor, please know that you are not alone, and resources are available to support you on your journey. Today, I am honored to welcome a woman whose courage and resilience truly embody what this podcast is all about. Darlene Lukowski is an author, speaker, advocate, and most importantly, a survivor. After keeping her childhood trauma hidden for over 50 years, she is now sharing her truth to inspire others to heal and find their own voices. Her upcoming memoir, set to release in April 2026, tells the story of resilience, healing, and reclaiming personal power. Darlene's story embodies the full path of our imperfect level up framework. She's let her inner voice lead. She's embraced the messy middle of the healing. And now she's boldly passing on her story so that others can find the courage to speak theirs. Darlene, I am so grateful to have you here. Welcome to Becoming is Messy.
Thank you, Megan. I am super excited. And thank you for the intro. It's been a journey, let me tell you. And I'm so happy to be able to tell my story. And it's taken me 50 years to do it. So thank you.
We are honored to have you share it on Becoming is Messy today. Help us set the stage for the conversation and tell us a little bit about the season you're in right now.
So to describe the season I'm in right now, it's about letting go. It's about freeing yourself of a secret that I held for 50 years. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how much trauma I was hiding inside. All these years, I thought I was protecting myself, protecting my parents, protecting my children. But I forgot about protecting little Darlene. You know,
yes.
I survived and I created strategies to survive because I was abused from ages 7 to 12 by two of my oldest brothers. And so how does a little girl take that and move life forward? But then I found in my adulthood, everything I did to survive was in my situations with my children. And once I became free of it all and let go of that gook and that tar, I am in such a better place. I have a wonderful marriage. My second husband, we don't argue anymore. I'm not in control anymore. My children, they're like, Mom, I wish you would have told me about your trauma years ago. I get you now, is what they've said.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I love that. What you've described reminds me a little bit. I'm on my second marriage, too. And we refer to it as life 2.0, is that life after freeing yourself of that shame is so powerful. So we always say that all of our becoming stories have their own messy path. You've referenced some of your childhood twists and turns. Just as an adult, what were some of the twists and turns that helped you realize that those secrets were weighing you down and bringing you more pain?
I didn't realize it, but all my life I had actually had PTSD. I had divulged my secret to my closest friends. And they did. I had PTSD moments where I said to my girlfriends, I'm so embarrassed of how I behaved last night. I was super reactionary. I didn't know it wasn't me. But then moving on to my adulthood, it was all about I have to be in control, because if I'm in control, then I will survive. I made two vows as a very young child. I vowed that I was never going to destroy my family, because if my parents knew, I knew my mother would just be completely devastated and obliterate our entire family. And then I also said, I have to win at all costs. I am never going to let these brothers see me fail. But when you do that, you in your marriage, your husband becomes your opponent. Children become your, and so you have to shed yourself of all of that emotion, all of that hurt, all of that pain, all of that sorrow to be able to live your life forward.
When you first spoke those words to your closest friends after holding onto a secret for 50 years, what did letting that go at first feel like?
Yeah. And my first friend I told, I was actually in college at Michigan State. Her brother had come on to me and, okay, you're going to get a kiss in the hallway. A normal girl wouldn't react, but I flipped out. I told her, I'm like, listen, this is what happened to me. I can't be approached in this manner. And so she said, Darlene, do not go this alone. And that's really where my girlfriends helped me so much, is every time I told a girlfriend, they wanted to help me. They believed me. They said, you shouldn't go this alone, but I'd made that vow and commitment that my parent to know. And so at Michigan State, they believed me. They helped me. After college, another incident when I was in Washington, D.C., where I was on a dance floor, and again, a boy approached me, and they thought somebody put drugs in my drink, but my girlfriends took care of me.
Hush, our girlfriends. For anybody listening, I think that just showing up for our girlfriends and holding space without judgment is one of the greatest gifts that we can give to each other. Mm-hmm. I always thought that sharing these kind of secrets would push people away, but to have those first few women in my life accept me, love me, feel for me, it just was so emboldening to be able then to tell more people and to let it go.
Yes, absolutely. And I don't know, part of my story is when it all became public in 2021, after my mother, I asked my brother for an apology. I didn't get that apology. Instead, I got a lawsuit.
So share a bit more about that experience, to have kind of your hand forced with such a public display through a lawsuit.
I know. So I think what I had to understand was, how do you move life forward when you are desperate for the words, the validation that, yes, I'm sorry, and it never comes. And so I had to realize I had to take justice and agency under my own belt and continue to move forward in a more positive way and fight back. And those girlfriends who I told, that I had five girlfriends and a therapist who were all my witnesses at the trial. And I am so grateful for them. In fact, I wear this necklace, grateful, and I gave each of them the grateful and the date that I won the trial on the back of the necklace, because had I not had those friends stand up for me, say, yes, she told me 20 years ago, it is the truth. No woman would make this stuff up. No one would make this stuff up. It helped me win.
Wow. So after that, to me, finding the strength to face that and then win, what did that unlock for you? What did transpire in the wake of winning in that situation?
Yeah. So at first I thought winning meant I won the trial. A jury of men believed me. On February 4th, 2024, I won in less than an hour. On the suit of my brother, and I countersued him for defamation as well, because he was telling everybody I'd have a nervous breakdown, I was a pathological liar, all of that stuff. So I thought, I did it. I won the trial. I'm freed now. Well, that's not how healing works. I want a trial. He's still in denial.
Yeah.
He will never, ever admit to what he did. And that's when I knew I had to go further. I had to tell my story because I needed to now do it for me. I was no longer fighting back against him. So I really realized justice at first was an apology. Apology never comes. And yep. I thought justice was, I'm going to win the trial. I won the trial, but it fell flat. I'm like, well, this doesn't do me any good. And after that came the bitterness and the anger and the resentment. And I'm like, I can't believe he tortured me more, made me relive all of this trauma for 2 years. And I still don't feel good.
And what, no, it's almost re-traumatizing you.
Exactly what it ended up being.
Yeah.
What justice became for me was releasing the burden of my secret.
Yeah, it's huge. It's making me think, I loved this phrase of yours that I read, that trauma is like a box that leaks.
Yes.
And I think that metaphor feels so accurate to me. In what you're describing, how did that phrase feel for you? What made you think of trauma as a box that leaks?
At 7 years old, I put my trauma in a box. Kept shoving it down and shoving it down, and nobody's to know. I kept it all to myself until I was out of that house. I was away at college. And then that's when the leaking started. It equated almost to a volcano. It's bursting. It's about to explode. But then I push it back down. And then the leak, the lava, if you will, start happening. I have a PTSD moment at this event. I am doing everything I can in a survival mode.
Yes.
You know?
I feel that.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. You think, I think as a little girl, you don't realize that holding on to that secret is causing so much damage to your nervous system. And then as an adult, you think the same coping mechanisms are going to work forever. And then those little bubble up moments where you blow up and you have no idea why, it just can be so damaging to your life. And curious, as those bubble ups were happening, what role did therapy or psychological healing play in getting you to a place where you could let some of those secrets go?
Originally, I went to psychiatrists at Michigan State. I was free. I was a college student. And back then, that was the 80s. There was a lot of men, a lot of old men.
Uh-huh.
And it's nothing against old men. Psychiatrists just didn't work for me. It really took with my first husband in 2005. I was actually divorcing him, and our good friends said, we have a friend that you should meet. His name is Rich Nisbet. He's a counselor. We met as a couple with him. He saved our marriage. And I was like, you know what? This guy's pretty good. He really is able to tap into your memories and understand what is bothering you and unlocks those. So I started my personal healing with that. He helped me get rid of my nightmares, my fears of getting raped and murdered again, all of the crazy, deep-seated trauma experiences. And then when I was going through the trial, it all exploded again. So I also went to a woman and tried EFT tapping.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had heard that is really good for PTS folks. We worked with her in between the counselor and his non-traditional therapies and the EFT tapping. It has really helped me tremendously. Everybody has their own path and how they appeal.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And those.
Yeah, I love hearing the modalities that work for others. I think that's definitely a big part of the Imperfect Level Up framework is finding your own healing tools and switching them up. To me, it never stops that you are going to be seeking new tools and what works for you now. It might be a new therapist. I change therapists often. It's like one meets a need. It gets me over a level up situation in my life, mm-hmm. and then no longer serves me. And I need a different modality and a new tool in my toolbox.
Yes.
I'm curious for you, you've had a successful career alongside this healing journey,
mm-hmm.
and the word duality comes to mind. And I'm wondering for you, what has duality looked like in your professional life as you were holding on to all of this pain?
And I think the duality was really my entire life.
You know,
when you put your trauma in a box, little Darlene was put in a box. And
yeah.
I, my one personality, the girl that was hurt, the girl that had tremendous pain, was betrayed by the brothers that were supposed to take care of her. And growing up and when I went into the business world, the survival tools that I did actually helped me because I'm in sales.
Yeah.
So
yes.
That's pretty good to be in
sales. Oh, that's so true.
But I just felt like I had two different personalities. And
yes.
my business personality and who I was becoming and how I was growing and achieving and strategy to move my career forward. But I do think a lot of that was ingrained in me, too, that I wasn't going to fail. I was always going to win. And that can help you in certain situations. But then I still had little Darlene that kept bubbling up and kept leaking, if you will. And so now by freeing it all, I've actually one person.
Yes.
And it's so great.
So powerful.
Yes.
So great. And don't find that becoming one person, I used to think that the duality for me was good and bad.
Mm.
And that I was trying to get rid of the bad, hide the bad.
Yes, exactly.
But really, the owning the whole was accepting the duality and honoring it and sharing the story of it and realizing that you can't get rid of it, you know, that you're all of these pieces and they all together make you.
Yeah, exactly. And I think as victims, we carry the shame, but there's never there for us to carry.
What message do you want listeners that are carrying that to hear today, just to help them understand more clearly that it's not theirs to carry?
And that's exactly it. Forgiveness, self-appreciation, that this was not my fault. This was not my burden to carry. I've carried it for 50 years and I'm not going to do it anymore. And like I said, I had to get everything I was doing, the anger and the resentment and the black tar that I was carrying, it was all about my brother. Well,
yeah.
You have to take that and turn it around and say, it is now has to be about me. And when you tell your story and when you open up, you get so much clarity and peace and growth. And even my family has said, Mom, you are a completely different person now that you
got
up. You're free.
Oh, I love
that. You're kind.
Yes.
And not that I wasn't kind before.
There's a difference when you're free. It shows up in so many areas of your life. It's a lightness that's different than without it.
Yes, yes. If you want peace and you want to live forward, then you've got to let go. That's really what I'd love you to hear. And it's okay too late to tell your story. Look at me.
Yeah.
I'm fitting my story.
Yes. That's so true. And I love that you now volunteer with organizations supporting survivors of sibling sexual assaults. So not only are you just sharing your story, but you're helping people that are in that situation. Why is that particular advocacy work so important to you?
Yeah. Sibling sexual trauma and abuse, we call it a hidden taboo. For years, this icky word, nobody talked about it. Honestly,
yeah.
When I started going public October, a year ago, today, actually,
yes.
I never even knew these organizations existed. I still thought I was the only one who had been abused by a brother. And the reason these organizations are so important is we have to make SSTA, which is sibling sexual trauma and abuse, an everyday word. To make victims know it's okay to say, me too, it happened to me, to release the shame, to release their trauma so that they can live forward. I don't want anyone to go through the hell that I've gone through. And that's why I'm speaking out. And that's why I'm trying to help others.
I feel like when I used to think that I was alone in this, and that telling my story was going to shun people.
Yes.
And I want the listeners to realize that whatever they're carrying shame for, that somebody else can relate to that feeling. And when you start confiding in people to tell your story, you start also finding others that have been through it.
Yes.
And that's also validating to you. So I feel like by sharing your story, you're helping others, but it's also giving you strength because it's confirming to you that you're not alone in this experience.
And since I've gone public a year ago, I couldn't even get on a podcast like this without shedding a bunch of tears. Look at my growth, where I've been.
Yes.
And I really want people to understand. And it's not just sexual abuse. If you're facing any trauma, no matter what's happened to you, and it doesn't have to be trauma, if there's anything holding you back, anything trying to steal your joy, trying to shame you, trying to hold you back and stop your joy and stop you from moving forward, I believe my story is for you. This helps other men and women realize that there is hope. There is a way to move our lives forward, and it doesn't have to be destructive. I thought by shutting down my shame and by silencing myself, it was helping me. But actually, at the end, it was hurting and opening Pandora's box, if you will. And really, what my brother did at the end of the day, he actually gave me a gift. Me and me winning the trial, ironically, he gave me the gift to now openly tell my story because I won. That crazy.
I know. Isn't that crazy? What is now so dynamic with your brothers?
I've gone from a family of seven to now a family of one. Three older brothers. So my one brother, who's 2.5 years older than me, did not know anything about what was going on. He didn't hurt me. He and I are still very close. My parents have since deceased. The two brothers who did harm me, I don't have any relation with either one of them anymore. The one who's 9 years older than me, he actually did apologize, and it was great, and it was validating, and I was so thankful, and I forgave him over the phone. But then when it came public with the other brother, he recanted it all. So I'm like, I think in life, you have a moment where you have to say, do I really need these individuals in my life anymore? And that's what I've done. I really don't. If they're not willing to man up and say, hey, yeah, I did it and I'm sorry, then I got to move forward with people that believe me and want to be enriching their lives together as I'm enriching mine.
Yeah, like boundaries can be so loving. I think that's another just gift that we gain with age and wisdom and realizing that we can have boundaries. And that doesn't mean that we're poisoning ourselves with shame and anger by loving people, wishing them well from afar, wishing them well on their own healing journey, but just not having them in your life.
Exactly. All my childhood, I did everything I could to keep my family together because 90% of my family was good. Now, years later, I have one family member left. My sister passed away and so did my parents, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I want to be okay with that. It's how you make the choices in life to say, this is what I need to be whole, and this is what I need to be going to reject the way you're treating me anymore, and I don't need you in my life.
I love that framework, this is what I need to be whole. I think that is such a good lens for all of us to check in with ourselves on. And I'd be curious, so what else do you need to be whole as the woman you are today?
Oh, that's a great question. I think just continuing to say, I'm okay, I'm proud, and I'm not ashamed, and I am happy of the path that I am leading today. I'm not only giving myself more clarity by writing my book, by sharing my story with others, I'm now on a journey to help others not go through what they have gone through. My relationship with my family is better. And that is really how I'm becoming whole. And every day I'm learning something new. Every day I'm meeting more people. Every day I'm talking to folks like you to really understand and see how, by letting it all go, you can move life forward.
Yeah, so true. Thinking back now, when you were thinking back to the little girl that you once were, what are some things that you would want her to know now?
Don't be afraid. You will be believed, and you're not going to destroy your family.
No.
That's what I believed. I grew up in a very, very conservative Midwest Christian family. And in the 70s, nobody talked about their issues. Nobody talked about their problems. You buried it under the rug. But I want to tell that little girl, we did it. We saved ourselves.
Yes.
And I'm so proud of you for becoming who you are. And I'm so glad we're one being again who can live our life fully and richly. But also, you don't need to keep secrets. Confide in people. Trust people. I trusted my girlfriends. I always said I could do this alone. No, don't go it alone. That's what I would say to your listeners, too.
Yes.
These journeys are hard. These journeys are messy. These journeys are yucky.
Yeah.
But in each other, find that person. Find your one or 10 people, like I did, my girlfriends, that believe you and can help you move your journey forward.
Oh, it's so beautiful. And I think not just for the little girl that you once were, but for the model that you're now setting for your own family. Doesn't that just feel amazing to be able to set for them the things that we didn't have?
Yes. Yep. And even one of my sons said, "Mom, I understand you. I get you. Why you were such a controller for me. Because what happened to you?"
Yes.
Sorry, my internet.
That's okay.
And even my daughter, like when I first told her, she said, "Mom, it sounds like you haven't forgiven yourself first."
No.
And I thought that was such a telling story for a daughter to say to her mother. I recognize you haven't forgiven yourself.
Yeah.
And I knew that I had to.
It
took me 3 more years to finally forgive myself.
Oh, I just love that I'm going to botch this quote, but the whole idea that children don't treat themselves how we treat them. They learn to treat themselves how we treat ourselves. And to be able to teach them vulnerability and to be able to see us as imperfect humans is such a gift that you're providing to your family.
Yes. In all these years, I thought, by keeping my secret point, they'll just be so ashamed of their mother. And when I told all three of them, I was horrified. I was like, who needs to hear these words from their mother?
Of course.
But at the end, it became beautiful. And they all believed me. And they all like, "Mom, we wish you would have told us sooner." So all those barriers I put up and the walls that I put up and the protections I put up, I didn't need.
Yeah. And they're going to have feel hurt in their life, too. If they've felt shame, it might not be to the same extent or the same way. But I think that when we can show them how we're navigating and how life has hurt us, I think that resonates. And they see within themselves that feelings are hard, but it doesn't make them wrong.
Yeah. And I had one of my other sons. He had issues with marijuana and alcohol. And he was in and out of hospitals. And he's even said to me, "Mom, you're a great example of how I need to move life forward." And he's been clean for over 3 years now.
Wow. What a testament to hear from your children that you're a good example.
Yeah.
Like I don't know what else as parents we can ask for. That's wonderful.
Yes.
These next few questions are a section I call Rapid Reel. Just some lighter questions, simple answers, whatever comes to mind. First one. Do you have a favorite place you like to go when you need some grounding?
Oh, boy. Well, as a child, it was my tree.
Yes.
And book, I talk about I did everything in my power to escape getting out of the house. So I found my favorite tree and I would go up there and I would climb to the very top. Nobody knew I was up there. And I was flying with the birds and hearing the leaves, and it was such a transformational place for me. And now as an adult, my transformational place is really my backyard. I live in the middle of a pine tree forest, and to sit on my back porch and just listen to the leaves again, as in I have to slow down.
As you were describing that, I could smell the pine tree, like just to be in like a crisp air with the pine trees all around is just so cathartic.
It is.
Are you a morning person or a night owl?
I'm more of a morning person, but my problem, I stay up till 11, 11:30 and then I get up at 5. So how does that work?
Yeah, so true. Yeah. Especially if you get on a show with a good cliffhanger and you want to keep going.
But I get up at 7:30 every weekend and I'm up like an hour before my husband. So my poor husband, two cups of coffee in me and I start.
I love that. Who is somebody that inspired you in your life?
Personally, it was my dad.
Your dad?
Yeah.
Okay.
And mom too.
Yes.
Yeah. My mom was born in 1927. In the 1950s, she went to Hope College, which is a Christian college in West Michigan. She didn't get married till 27. She worked. She became president of her sorority. So she was that go-getter mom. She's considered an old maid when she didn't get married till she was 27.
Yeah, like she was ahead of her time.
She was. And she was a cougar. She was 3 years older than my dad when she got married.
I love it.
Back in 1955. But then my dad, just super intelligent, super smart, ingrained a great work ethic in us. And my mom was a super hard worker too, but we were all incredibly athletic. And being a super athlete, overachiever athlete, was one of my ways to get out of the house. And so my dad actually took us out to the ball field behind our house, taught us how to play basketball, baseball, water ski, things like that. So I think the combination of both of them reared me into how I was able to survive and who I am today.
Beautiful. How about a book in your journey? Has there been a book or two that have stood out and made a difference in your life?
Oh, I'm going to ruin the title. Is it Untamed by Glennon?
Oh, yeah, Glennon
yes.
Doyle.
Is it Untamed?
But so good.
I loved it because, you know, she realized who she was, middle of life, too, and the journey that she went on. And there's so many quotes in that book as a survivor and a woman that I could completely relate to. That would be one of mine.
All right. Last one of these, your own book. What has writing your memoir, what has surprised you in that process?
It became really cathartic. I regained memories that I didn't even know I had. I had to relive my trauma a third time. I lived it. I was on a trial over it. And then I wrote a book about it. And so what was really amazing is I used a ghostwriter. And so she was third party, almost like a therapist, if you will.
Yes.
Kind of
pulling
out questions and tell me more about this. Tell me more about that. And I really believe through writing the book is where I really had the realization of my silence was doing me no good. Keeping it in that box was doing me no good. And at the end of writing it, I really turned the chapter and said, I've got to let it go. I can't keep all of this anger and bitterness. And I'm pissed off, but it's doing me no good.
Yeah.
Through writing the book, I just realized this book is not about my assaults. The book is really about what I did to survive.
Yes. What a great reframing.
Yeah.
That is huge.
I had to reframe
that.
It wouldn't be a book that people would want to read if you didn't have that healing moment at the end.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, so true. I love the idea that our wound is where our special gift is.
Yes.
And I don't wish hurt on anybody, but we all have it.
Yes.
And we might as well alchemize it into something powerful for ourselves.
Right.
So help us give a gift to the world.
Exactly. Right. And I really do whatever I can not to eat my brothers anymore.
Yeah.
What is the purpose of that? Doing me? Had one of them not sued me, I would have been able to forgive, but that wasn't in the cards for me. So
no.
The lawsuit happened. I won. and I can move forward.
And yep, I'm
good for
freed
you. From the silence. Is really.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. I have just one more question for you. But before I get there, is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you wanted to share? And then also, can you just let our folks know how they can connect with your work?
Sure. One thing that I would like to share, and we've done it already, but I just think I am extremely vulnerable in my book, and it's scary. It's okay to be vulnerable, because in order to see the good, you have to see the messy parts. You have to see the choices that I made and why I made them. You have to see what I did to survive, but not only what I did to survive, but the turning moment of what I did to move life forward. And I think if we can all look at that perspective and say it's okay to go through pain, it's okay to go through messy, it's okay to go through shattered shards of glass. But at the end, it's how you move it forward, how you are able to be on that healing journey. And so I think that's really, if your listeners take anything from this, it is if you've had any pain in your life, if you've had anyone trying to block you, there is a way out. There is a way to move forward.
Well, thank you. You've so done that for us today. Really, the main purpose of this podcast, Becoming is Messy, is to be able to free us from holding on to any pain we have. I want us to all own our messy.
Yes.
I think that it's just our messy has been made to be taboo for so long, and there's no need for it to be. We all have messy lives, and I love any chance to be able to highlight somebody's story that's willing to be courageous, because you're helping so many other people do the same. And so I thank you. And I have one final question for you.
Oh, go ahead. I didn't mention Reach Me.
Oh, yes, please. Yes. How can we connect with you? Yes. I was just so resonating with your words.
Oh, thank
you. Please, how can we connect with you and tell us about the book launch?
Sure. So connecting with me, I'm on Instagram under Darlene Mikowski. So it's really long, but it's DarleneMikowski. And then if you want to learn more about my book, you can go to my website, which is darlene-likowski.com. And on there, I have a quarterly newsletter that I give updates about the book. The book is called Shattering Silence, which is so important that we don't hold on to our secrets anymore. And it's coming out April 2026. But between now and then, I'm talking to people like you and getting the word out of the healing journey that we all need to go through. It's okay to be messy.
Thank you. We will be excitedly waiting for Shattering Silence. But in the meantime, excited to go follow your work and stay connected. For now, we do have listeners that are maybe in their messy middle listening right now. When you found yourself in those moments in your past, what's a piece of advice that you wish would have arrived sooner?
You don't have to be silent. It's okay to talk, but share your story. If you don't share it publicly, just share it with somebody. Get help. Don't go it alone. I went alone most of my journey, except for my girlfriend. So find that refuge, find that help, find that peace, and figure out what you need to do for you. Stop focusing on who harmed you and what was done to you, but focus on what you need to do to move your life forward.
With that, Darlene, thank you for sharing your heart and your story and having courage to be vulnerable with us today. And to our listeners, with today's conversation helping to highlight our final competency of the imperfect level up, our P, pass it on, here's a tip. Sharing your story doesn't always mean writing a book or speaking on stage. Passing it on might look like confiding in a trusted friend, mentoring somebody who's walking a similar path, or simply starting by being honest with yourself about what you've lived through. Every time you pass it on, you not only free yourself a little bit more, you light the way for others. Thanks for listening. Keep tuning in, keep showing up, and stay messy, my friends.
Before we wrap today, I want to invite you to be part of the Becoming is Messy community. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a single episode. And if there's anything that resonates with you, please leave a review. Your feedback means the world to me, and it helps other people find this community. Follow me on social media. I'd love to hear your ideas for future topics, your questions, and stories from your own messy moments. And if you're feeling inspired, check out the Becoming is Messy shop, where you can grab a mug, a t-shirt, or something else that reminds you to embrace your messy magic every single day. A huge thank you to the incredible Wolves and Sheep for providing the music for Becoming is Messy. Check them out on your favorite music streaming platform. As we close out today's episode, remember this. Messy is just another word for growing. So keep showing up, keep laughing, and keep making beautifully awkward progress. Until next time, stay messy, my friends.